So we...Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fluffy as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 10, Over the Rainbow. October 13th, 2013. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode are located on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. If you enjoy the show, please like the Yarns at Yin Hu Facebook page or join the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry.You can find me on Ravelry and Twitter as Sarah Pomegranate. I welcome your suggestions and comments. This week I heard from several listeners who enjoyed episode 9, Find the Remote, in which I talk about my weekend trip to Vermont and an interview with my sister Jessica, who is living off the grid. Thank you to Maggie Vienna, Rachel, Laura, Amy Bernhardt, and Lara Moody, who left a comment on the show blog.Lara wondered how a bunch of Jersey girls came to be such self-sufficient country women, and then she mentioned that she was raised in a similar style an hour outside of Orlando. And I think there are a lot of us who were raised near urban areas, perhaps in the suburbs or further out, who have parents who valued teaching us the old ways of doing things on a budget and by hand, and the extraordinary amount of satisfaction that can come of that. And I think it's incumbent upon us, as we are reaching adulthood and in adulthood now, to share those skills and share those ideas with peers, because I think some of these things can be lost arts, and it's important to keep them alive as much as possible and show other people how to take pleasure from the simple things in life. This week's episode features segments titled Ever Expanding Skill Set and Yarn Lover at Large. Well, it was a gorgeous October weekend here in the Poconos with blue skies, very warm weather, a light breeze, and gorgeous rainbow of color everywhere.One of my favorite things in October is to look at the water. And on several of my walks, I walk along the Delaware River. And for some reason this time of year, the water can look very, very dark, almost black. And then there are these beautiful multicolored leaves floating on the water. I've been seeing that on my walk for the last few days. It's just been an extraordinary sight. For ever expanding skill set,I've been working on a few things. One is that on Saturday when I came home from my work with the National Writing Project at Rutgers, Samuel was building a wood bin. We had a wood bin that was too small, and we took it down, anticipating that we might make a shed this summer. But that didn't happen, and now I'm starting to grow concerned that we don't have any wood for our fireplace for the winter.Ordinarily, this would be a little early to think about wood for the fireplace, but given last year and Hurricane Sandy, I think you just can't be too prepared for the apocalypse. So we haven't purchased any wood because we took down our wood bins. We reconstructed the wood bin, and I'm really pleased with it. It's double wide, I guess you could say. It holds wood two stacks deep so that we think we can fit a cord of wood.Into that space. Last year, when Hurricane Sandy struck, we were slightly unprepared, and we had a delivery of wood a day after the storm at about 8 o'clock at night, and we stacked wood late into the night. We were able to stay in our home, even though we didn't have electricity, for 6 days at Silver Lake Tea House, but we do have a fireplace, and since it wasn't very cold, we were able to keep the house, or at least a small area of the house, quite warm We were able to cook over the fire. I got out my enamel teapot and we heated water for drinking and for washing. We weathered through the storm and through our days without electricity using our fireplace. It's very important to me that we have our firewood ready just in case. And I think there was a sign that we were doing the right thing by building the wood bin and being prepared. Because as dusk settled in and I was raking leaves and Samuel was cleaning up all the tools that we used by that point, there was a screech owl in a tree directly over where we had been working. It was impossible to see the screech owl. We knew it was there and it was very close because you could hear that it was right over your head, and we looked and looked and looked and we couldn't see it. It had stopped making its cooing, vibrato, cooing sounds by that time, but we looked and looked, and then we saw it fly out of the tree and further down the creek. We've had a couple of screech owls around here all summer long, and they seem to be very active as dusk settles, and sometimes again later at night, and you can hear their very distinctive calling. It was just such a beautiful thing and a great ending to a nice fall day. On our way home from Vermont, we stopped at the Dorset Farmers Market, this charming little market in Dorset, Vermont, and we made a couple of purchases. Among them, I bought a very large bunch of rainbow chard. I've been on a real leafy greens kick this fall, and I have a recipe idea to share with you. It turned out delicious at Yinhu, and I hope that you might try it at your house and let me know how it goes. I purchased a very large bunch of rainbow chard, and I washed that off, patted it dry, and cut the chard in small pieces, about a half an inch, a quarter to a half an inch. I kept the stems separate from the leaves because the stems take a little bit longer to cook. I took out my trusty cast iron frying pan, put just a light coating of olive oil, and then into the pan I put a very small amount, I would say about an eighth of a cup or a little bit less, of dry cured meat, kind of like a hard salami stick that we had just for snacking on vacation. I had a little bit of it left, so I diced that into very small pieces. And I tossed that into the hot pan and rendered that before I started putting in the chard. It gives the whole dish a velvety, richer, more flavorful texture without adding a lot of meat to the dish. I first added the stems of the chard and sauteed those, added a little bit of salt to help the liquids come out of the chard. Then I added the leaves that were also chopped. Sauteed those a little bit, and then I put a lid on the pan and just let everything wilt down. Toward the end of that process, which takes about 5 minutes or so, I added a half a cup of finely chopped raisins to the pan. Just toss that around, turn the heat down, and let that sit there while I made a sauce. To make the sauce, I melted a tablespoon of butter. Added a tablespoon of flour and stirred with a whisk to make a roux. And then I added about a cup of whole milk. You could use skim milk. You could also use cream or half and half if you wanted something more luxurious. I whisked that mixture as it came to a boil, let it bubble for about 30 seconds, and then turned it down. And to that sauce, I added about 2 ounces of a goat feta. Let that melt more or less. Goat feta isn't something that really melts into a smooth texture, but I let that melt down as much as possible. To that sauce, it was already quite salty because of the feta cheese, but I added quite a bit of grated nutmeg. In a large bowl, I folded the sauce into the Swiss chard mixture. And then I put that into a casserole dish and I topped it with some sauteed breadcrumbs. The last time I made this, for some reason, the breadcrumbs I took out were some breadcrumbs made from cinnamon raisin bread. I just had some that was nearly going stale, and instead of throwing it out, I just whizzed it up in the food processor and put it into bags and put it in the freezer. And I used that sauteed in a little bit of butter or olive oil as a topping for a casserole. I didn't have any cinnamon raisin bread this time around, so I took out some bread cubes that I had placed in the freezer. I chopped them up in the food processor and I sauteed them with olive oil and just added a little bit of cinnamon to them. And I covered the casserole with that mixture. I baked this at 350 degrees for about 20 to 25 minutes. It was delicious. It is so good. I can't describe the depth of the flavor and the interest of the textures. It makes a great main dish if you eat quite a lot of it, or it can make a great side dish. I might revive this recipe for Thanksgiving and serve it as a side. This dish combines the best of savory, salty, sweet, and tart. I'm calling it over the rainbow chard casserole. If you get a chance, I hope you'll try something like this or try a recipe that you find on your own with Swiss chard. It's a fabulous fall find and a great way to stay strong as you hone those post-apocalyptic skills. Yarn lover at large. Well, this week I had an unexpected opportunity to check out a store in Metuchen. That is not a yarn store, but nevertheless has a small corner devoted to yarn. It is the Brass Lantern on Main Street in Metuchen. I went there with my friend Christy, who is a brand new knitter. We were searching for some yarn ideas for her second project ever. She had selected a pattern called Maine Morning Mitts. It's by Clara Parks. It's a fantastic little pattern, and I decided I liked it so much that I would try knitting it as well. So we were looking around at the Brass Lantern, which, if you ever go there and do some shopping in Metuchen, it's a great shop for a gift. They have jewelry, clothing, all things primarily for women, seasonal items, ornaments, holiday decorations, that kind of thing. And just like I said, a small section devoted to yarn, but the yarn that was there was a really nice selection of things you might like to use to make a last-minute gift or make something small for yourself. We each selected some Noro yarn for this pattern. It calls for 100 grams of, I guess, probably between a worsted and Aran weight. I chose Noro Silk Garden in a colorway with greens and pinks and purples. And Christy chose a colorway, I'm not sure the name of it, but it had reds and purples, I believe. It was a little bit brighter. We were able to sit right in the shop upstairs because the proprietor or whoever it was who was working there was very kind and let us sit down and do a little bit of a knitting lesson. So we cast on our double-pointed needles and got the pattern started and chatted away and worked on these Maine morning mitts. It was an unexpected start of a new project, but I found that it was pretty addictive. I always find working with Noro yarn is addictive. I never want to stop because I really enjoy the way the colors flow into each other. Some people talk about with Noro yarn, there's always a kind of an icky color that they don't like and they cut it out. I love those colors that stand out, seem a little bit unusual for the whole color scheme, but those colors really pop and I enjoy working with them. I also enjoy Noro as a relatively new knitter because I think the thick and thin texture of it and the nubbiness hides mistakes in your knitting and makes it just look, lumpy, bumpy, handmade, and wonderful without being something so smooth and delicate that you can point out every little mistake. So I think it's very forgiving for beginners. Everyone who I've ever given a project to made out of Noro yarn exclaims over the colors, Of course, they don't know that it's all the yarn at work. They think it's something extraordinary you did in choosing those colors. So you seem really impressive as a gift giver, and I just think you can't go wrong with Noro yarn. It could be that by the time I mix this podcast down and put it up online, I have completed my main morning mitts. So look for a photo when the podcast airs. I will certainly be a yarn lover at large this coming Saturday when I take my bus trip to Rhinebeck to the New York Sheep and Wool Festival. This is the first time I will go to Rhinebeck for this festival. I am beyond excited about it, even though I think I need to meet the bus at 6 a.m., and that's an hour from here. Maybe some of my excitement will wane by the time I'm bleary-eyed stepping on the bus, but I don't know. Some of the things I'm excited about, I intend to make a number of purchases, although I'm not the kind of person with a gigantic stash. I don't like to have a lot of yarn around that I don't have an idea for a project because maybe it's my Protestant upbringing. It makes me feel guilty if I have a lot of extra yarn that's not being used and isn't intended for a certain project. So I don't like to overbuy. I like to purchase things as I'm about to use them. I am interested, though, in seeing a lot of products because then I will be more prepared to purchase online when the time comes. Often it's difficult to make out textures and colors when you're looking at product photos online. So I'd like to go around to a lot of booths, even if I'm not going to do a great deal of purchasing, just to check out the products, to talk with the folks who make those things and sell those things, and maybe make some notes about what I would like to purchase further down the line. There are a few things I am intending to purchase. One is some very special buttons for the string band hat I'm making for Samuel. I have completed everything except for the I-cord drawstring, which is very simple, and the button band, which is not very simple, and which I'm nervous about because I've never knitted a button band before. I plan to get that done this week, though, so that I can take the hat with me to Rhinebeck and look at buttons in comparison to the hat and pick something truly extraordinary. The weather was so nice and the sun was so bright this afternoon that I sat on the porch and finished the last fiddly part on the hat before the button band. And that is a welt closure that forms a little pocket for the drawstring closure of the hat. Because I'm using black and gray yarn, it's very difficult to see how to pick up the stitches for the welt. And even though I'm growing more skilled at making welts since finishing the batade pattern, it was a little bit tricky because not only was I picking up and knitting two together, but then I was binding off at the same time. And that is a little bit different than the way the welts were formed in the batade. Some other purchases I plan to make are one new to me fiber from a new to me seller and a new to me yarn from a place where I've never bought yarn before. So I'm really dedicated to purchasing some new things and trying some new products in my shopping at Rhinebeck. I'm very eager for the podcaster meetup on Saturday. I believe it starts at noon. I'm excited to see some of my favorite podcasters and hand out some promotional items for Yarns at Yin Hu. If you listen to the show, I hope that I will see you and be able to give you a button with the Yarns at Yin Hu logo. I'm very excited about them. They arrived a few weeks ago and they look fantastic. I hope to be giving those out, promoting the show, and gain some new listeners. Finally, I have two very special purchases to make for our Teacher Tribute Challenge prizes, and I'll be putting them up online as soon as I purchase those. If you haven't taken part in the Teacher Tribute Challenge, now's the time. The contest closes on October 31st, what you need to do is think about a teacher in your life who's been very powerful and very meaningful, and write that teacher a letter and mail it. If perhaps you have a teacher who isn't around anymore, you might think of creative ways to write a letter. You might write a letter to someone you're mentoring and explain in the letter how this fantastic individual affected you and impacted your life. You might write to a family member or a friend of that teacher if that person is no longer around. I'm sure you can think of creative ways to participate in the contest. The final thing is to go online either to the thread in the Ravelry group or by posting a reply to episode 7, which is the episode when I first announced this contest, and post a tribute to that teacher online, letting us know maybe not the name, but something about the person and what his or her teaching has meant to you. I'll be doing 2 prize drawings, 1 for posts on the website and 1 for posts on the Ravelry blog, and I will do those sometime in early November. Best wishes joining the contest. It's a really good one, and if you enter, you can also double dip by going over to the U University podcast, that's EWE University, and you can also enter the contest there. Our quote this week is a poem and comes to us through Goodreads. Dare to love yourself as if you were a rainbow with gold at both ends. Abarjani, from the River of Winged Dreams. Thank you for listening. The music in today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sway nature thing. It's a sway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a sway nature thing. It's a sway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's herb will get you high till your face is smile. Jump on a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a sway nature thing. It's a sway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.